please pull up a seat and wind down. With your sojourn on Rokinshima, a pleasant one. The Witch of Truth has invited you to a tea party. We hope you choose to attend.
Welcome to a hidden tea party. I am Courtney, the witch of video games, pronouns she, her, and these are my guests.
Hi, I'm Jess, my pronouns are they, them. Rowan's wearing a cape.
So for those of you who were unable to catch the Twitter,
I will beat you to death with a rock.
Hi, my name's Rowan, my pronouns are they, them, and I'm on the naughty stand. So, for context, dear listener, I'm wearing a cape because Courtney and I met in person and I found a lovely popped collar cape, battler-esque, and I've decided to wear it to the recording today. Nothing else of note has been going on.
We were really worried it was going to cost, like, at least 1 ton of gold, but turns out it was only 10p, so it was totally 10p. Worth it.
They were having a sale on their Halloween stuff, and my mother, the Witch of Bargains, was with me.
Not the Witch of Bargains!
I think the most upsetting thing about this cape is the longer I look at it, the more I'm like, this slaps, I should be wearing this gold constantly.
The worst thing is that you're like, actually, Battler was right.
Battler did kind of pop off though. I'm giving Bela Lugosi, I think, with this one. It's a bit more like silky and it's just got the one popped collar, but oh well. Any goth women out there know what I'm talking about. Alas. That's all I've got for you.
Shall we get into this reading?
Yes, I think we should. Before I say something worse.
Before you beat me to death with a rock.
It's actually my instinct. Anyone with an Erica Ferrudo profile.
Oh, actually, we should probably explain this. The Twitter has been temporarily, permanently
gone.
Suspended. We're appealing it. Because Rowan tweeted, I will beat you to death with a rock, as an Erica Ferrudo bot.
And you know what? I'll do it again. They let me back on that Twitter and I'm straight back in that. I'm going to go into her DMs like, hi, dear person who made this bot, I'm sure you're a lovely person. By any chance you're goth, to the bot, I will beat you to death with a rock.
Imagine my surprise this morning, looking at my emails, being like, now, what have they done? Who suspended the Twitter?
I should not have been given power over anything, let alone the Twitter.
No, you don't understand. This is beautiful and it only happened because you were put in charge of the Twitter.
Yes. I may have to...
a blaze of glory.
One of two things will happen. Either we will make a new Twitter and I will be a little bit better behaved, or we will get it back and you there may just be a bit of a lacuna while I try and like not be quite so horrible online.
We try not to get us back
to Erica bots.
I will Google what are things you're allowed to say on Twitter and I will be very careful.
Meanwhile, if people don't care what anybody says, come and visit me on the podcast Tumblr, the one remaining social media of the podcast.
Oh yeah, after we got banned from TikTok.
Can you imagine?
Posting
a pod TikTok. A pod TikTok would just be you in the cape, like floating around.
Like thirst traps in the cave.
Yeah.
That sounds great, actually. We should do this.
Bringing back Rowan thirst trap content, but it's just me in the cave.
Yeah.
Okay, let's actually get into the reading. Let's actually do it.
Dear me.
Let's actually do it. Okay, so our reading this week was from there we go. Chapter 3, True Feelings, to the end of Chapter 5, Source of Magic.
Mm.
Again, not sauce like the food. As fun as that would have been.
Devastatingly.
Ketchup of magic.
So, we start out with True Feelings, where we're having some more Shannon Cannon content.
Yes.
Where they're talking about their feelings, and Shannon's like, I'm going to marry George. Nothing can possibly go wrong here. And Cannon's like, I'm actually really sad I didn't tell Jessica that I liked her.
Yeah, I'm still like, I still don't know what to do with this whole Shannon-George thing now that we're like, oh, Shannon is Beatrice and Shannon loves Battler maybe and stuff. Like, what's going on with the whole George thing? I still don't know.
Courtney has said in the past that like some people theorise that Shannon just saw George as a way out of her situation. So it is possible. One does not always have to marry for love.
Shannon does say whether if her love bears fruit instead of Cannon's love, Shannon will forget Cannon and leave the island and this place forever.
Yeah, yeah. This is weird, isn't it? Because they set up this kind of, like, weird love competition.
Yeah.
Where it's like, there's a binary result. Either, they're talking about, like, either Shannon wins, her love is more stronger than Cannon's, so she'll leave the island with George and forget about Cannon. Or Cannon wins, his love is stronger, Shannon stays and Cannon declares his love, and, like, Shannon then can't leave. I'm like, why is it one or the other? And also, if both of you are in on a murder plot, why don't you know that neither of those things will happen?
So, I interpreted this as them not actually talking about the romance at all.
Okay.
But they're, like, sidelong referencing the meta plot with the witches and the humans.
Mm-hmm.
My theory is that Cannon represents the human interpretation and Shannon represents the witch interpretation.
Okay.
And that's why Cannon's been, like, our main culprit for most of the murders so far, because we've been following the human explanation pretty closely, or, like, all of our theories have been human explanation pretty closely, and that Shannon will look more and more like the culprit as we go along and are lured into the witch side of events. But that only one of them can win because only one of them can be victorious in that right.
Yeah.
So I actually didn't think it was about Jessica and George at all. This particularly is reinforced by the fact that Shannon's, like, talking about love and status, and I feel like, and like, oh, so long as you love, it can be seen, and I feel like that's a very witch core thing to say, whereas Cannon's like, I am furniture, which is not exactly what I would expect from the, like, non-witch side of the argument, but pretty in line with, like, a non-compassionate interpretation of things.
Yeah, we also know, this is one of the difficult things about this, we also know there is no detective in this scene, so, like, we have no guarantee that they're saying what they're saying, that any of this actually happened, you know, that kind of stuff. Like, this could be a veiled metaphor for what they're really talking about or something as well.
So the boat pulls in with everyone, and Cannon goes off with Jessica to apologize for, you know, pulling away so quickly, and confesses that he has feelings for her and tells her his real name.
Yes, we get Cannon name reveal. And it is, how do we pronounce it, Courtney?
It is Yoshia.
Yoshia. I had seen this name around on the Twitter and just been like, bet that's a Higurashi character. the RIP to the Twitter, but the way I run it is if I see something that I don't immediately recognize to be Umin Echo, I just go, bet that's a Higurashi thing, and like keep scrolling, which is how I've kept myself relatively spoiler free, just by choosing the stupid way out.
Yeah, that's kind of what I've been doing as well.
Yep.
You're just like, anything that I don't immediately recognize or understand, I move on, and I'm like, yeah, that's probably something Higurashi or just a meme or something.
Yeah. Yeah, no. Who knows?
But yeah, what I like as well about this is that, so first of all, when the relatives arrive, like, because Kanon has admitted that he loves Jessica to himself, everyone's like, oh my god, Kanon, you look great. It's like, you look so much less miserable than usual. Hideyoshi tells him he has spunk today. Which, interesting choice of word translator. but yeah, like, they're all like, Kanon, you look incredible. And he's like, what?
Kanon, you're serving.
So that's really funny. And also, I realized in this moment how much I've missed seeing Maria. Because she arrives and I'm like, oh, baby.
Maria didn't get much to do last episode. So.
No, and I've missed her so much.
We've had a couple of episodes now where Maria's been like really background, so it's nice to get Maria.
Episode 4, we had a lot of Maria. It just wasn't on the game board.
Yeah, it wasn't very nice Maria things.
That's 2 episodes ago. Like that's episode 5.
Episode 4 was Maria. Maria and Rosa backstory stuff. And then episode 5 was Maria not doing very much because she died really early on.
This book is so long.
Especially when we read it at the pace we do. I said it's probably going to be a full year when we finish this since from when we started.
That was possibly more.
Possibly more. Months ago. Wow. Y'all. Anyway, it's nice to see Maria again.
It's nice that Kanon and Jessica have this nice little chat, like...
Yeah.
Kanon's like, you can call me Yoshia. Jessica's like, you can call me literally anything except M'lady, please.
Please, not M'lady.
And then he's like, okay, Jessica-san. And then immediately swaps back to calling her M'lady and doesn't actually realise.
he says he calls her Milady Jessica, so he improvement.
Bless. Ew.
What I do think actually is really cute though as well is that, like, because in kanji I assume you can spell Yoshia in different ways. Yes. So he like gets Jessica's hand and he like traces the kanji on her hand to show her how it's written, and I was like, oh, that's really sweet. Adorable. I'm like Shannon and George, but I'm like, Jessica and Canon's cute. It's you know, it's not without its problems, but it's cute.
it is a lot cuter.
It feels less creepy, and I think that's partially because of Canon's the hesitance of the two of them, but also because of their age and the fact that like I can't really see them seriously comprehending marriage. Like, I think it's been mentioned, but I don't think it's like genuinely.
I think it's also because you get the we get the idea from Jessica that her understanding about the power dynamic difference between her and Kanon is that she doesn't see one there because she's like, these are just my friends. She doesn't really understand it.
Yeah.
Whereas with George, it's like he gets it, but he's trying to get around it, but he's also kind of using it at the same time, and I'm like
I think that's very astute.
I will also say, speaking of how it is written, so the first the way Yoshia is written and the way Kanon is written in Japanese, they both have the same first kanji.
Yeah, because I suppose in English, Shannon and Sayo, you can kind of see that you can kind of see a similarity, whereas
this is a bit harder, so I thought I'd print
it
out.
This one, it doesn't translate as well.
Yes. So,
bless.
Well, it looks like the Shremir naming system is you just take the first kanji, and then you put on at the end, and that's fine.
Legendary.
They're not even allowed their own names.
What a great house to work in.
Yeah,
at least you get paid, but like, at what cost?
Yeah.
So, then we cut to Baby Triche, who is examining this scene, and
she's like, they're so cute!
Yeah, she's like, names are a big deal, huh? Maybe that's why Baffler doesn't like it when I call him father. And I'm like, well, there are probably multiple reasons
There are so many reasons. But I also thought, like, is this, you know, because I think she specifically says calling someone by their real name acknowledges their soul. Which, like, felt poignant. And I was also like, is this an indication that the Red Truths are, like, that Canon and Shannon Red Truths aren't going to be necessarily
it certainly
true for the, you know, Yoshia and Sayo as well. Or is it just a, like, an acknowledgement, the whole Beatrice thing, wanting to be acknowledged as a witch, and we're going back to that. There's a lot about acknowledging things in this book.
Yes.
Well, as we all know, you can do weird things with the Red Truth, as indicated in last episode. So
you can be finicky.
You can be finicky, because it's like the Red Truth does play on a rules lawyer rules, so you can just be like, well, it's technically true. So
yeah, we get a bit more of that this time as well, I think.
Something interesting. So the specific word that baby Triche, I can't remember what I called the last week.
Baby Triche
uses. The specific word for father she uses is one that can also be used for God. I thought that was really interesting. I don't know Japanese well enough, and I don't listen to the audio enough to know if it's the same word that everybody else has been using when they've been referring to God, but I think that's really interesting.
I'd be interested also to know whether it's the same word they've been using to refer to Kinzo when they say father.
Interesting. Yes,
because I think, like, it is.
Because everyone, including people who aren't, like Natsui calls him father, like all of the, like, siblings in law and stuff call him that, even though he isn't their dad. He's like this kind of the father figure. Okay,
I'll be back in a second.
No problem.
I'm going to take the opportunity to cough.
Good. That was beautiful, thank you. It will be cut out, so no one will know about the secret Jess cough.
Yeah. I've been ill. I was ill last time we recorded as well. It's the same thing.
Oh my god, are you still ill?
But it was like just starting last time. And I did the recording, and then I couldn't speak for like 2 days because my throat was like,
God.
Oh dear.
But yes, it is the same form of father that they used for Kinzo, which is Otosama.
Another Battler Kinzo parallel going on there.
It's all coming up. Rowan theories.
Meanwhile, Ange and Featherine are watching, and Ange is like, I feel bad for her. Featherine's like, I thought she killed all your family. And then Ange says, it's fine, because this is a different one. She clearly is not the same person who killed all my family.
Yeah.
She's pretty clearly not the same person that killed all Ange's family.
They also confirm, and I love this, by the way, because they talk about, like, how can she have changed so much from, you know, the Beatrice who killed all of Ange's family to this? And it's like, you know, she lived 1,000 years. Well, 6. Like, Featherine's like, it's like, time's weird in the witch world. You can live 1,000 years or whatever. It's, you know, it was 6 years, but it was 1,000 years. And I was like, yes. Right, okay, like,
okay. So
confirmation that you know, this is the current Beatrice is Beatrice as she was before Battle of Scinde, and then after Battle of Scinde, 6 years passed, and then we got the original Beatrice. I'm like, I wonder who it was.
I wonder what could have happened.
Yeah. So that's funny.
yeah.
Beatrice, Babytrice, goes to Kumasawa, who she's like, I'm struggling. I want to be the kind of Beatrice that father wants me to be. And Kumasawa turns into Vigilia and says that she should move down the path of roses, that she should walk down and see if she passes through the same 1,000 years that the old Beatrice did. And she takes her to the study where Featherine is with Ange.
Yeah. Yeah. They're like, hi. It also, like, I think it says at some point, like, it's like, oh, this isn't, like, it kind of says, like, this is an embellishment. They're not actually in the, like, Ange and Featherine aren't actually in the story. Yeah. But, like, it's like that basically Babytrice is being shown all of the past game boards the original Beatrice did. And so, like, she's kind of, she's reading the manuscripts or whatever and...
Yeah.
And trying to work out who the original Beatrice was.
Which is...
What I will say as well is that I notice here there's, like... There's also a big parallel between Babytrice and the Beatrice who Rosa killed.
Yes.
Or thought she killed. In the sense that, like that Beato was... She was kept in Cuadori and she was trapped there. She didn't know who she was. She was told she was Beatrice and that she was a witch, but she didn't really know anything about who that was supposed to be or the outside world or anything. And she had all of these expectations put on her that she didn't understand. I don't know what to do with that. Like, I guess because I don't know who that Beatrice really was still.
Yeah, don't we get them in Cuadorian?
Get who in Cuadorian?
Babytrice and someone else. They're like out sat in the...
Yeah, it's like the one scene we get with an actual alive Kinzo in it is when Kinzo goes to visit her and she's like, who am I? Tell me who I am.
No. No? I mean this reading. There's
not in Cuadorian this reading, I don't think.
No, there's like they're in like a fake Cuadorian, like a meta Cuadorian. But
okay, that's where I am allowing myself to be forgiven for thinking it was Cuadorian set.
It's the same background as Cuadorian, it's just got the purple filter over it.
I didn't even notice that, so
now we know.
So Beatrice decides to go on a journey to find herself after reading all the game boards, because you know, what, you read all the game. She read the VN and was like, "Damn, this shit life changing." I'm gonna do some soul searching.
Yeah, at this point, I was like, "Ooh, is this the point we're gonna get some like Beatrice backstory stuff?" And she's just like, "Better go think about some stuff," and then disappears. And I was like, "Damn it, not yet."
Sayo fully does the shit of like reads the VN. She just like me for real. I want to be like her. Starts kidding Beatrice. I'm just like, come on. I also agree. I was like excited for there to be some background, anything. about any of the Beatos at this point.
I think it will be coming. I think it's coming, but we'd not fully hit it
yet. Yeah.
What I do love, however, is that this chapter ends with, like, Erica getting fucking washed up on the island and being like, ah, ha, 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 butler, I have come to, like, coughing up seawater. Like, yes. I've come to avenge you. And she's, you know, like a tiny little swimming costume.
That was iconic. I was, like, picturing her, like, ripping off this, like, life fluorescent jacket. Orange life jacket.
She's on,
like, coughing up seawater.
I will ruin everything.
And proper, like, Disney villain lightning in the background. Incredible.
I also love, as well, that chapter 4 is called The Annoying Guest.
Yeah, it's a perfect note to go in on for,
like,
this.
You're like, oh, I see what we're going to be doing this chapter then.
Like, yes. And I will say, the moment I got in on this, I was like, oh, this is the cheese chapter. Because how can you forget Erica's
cheese
epic
chapter.
Cheese moment?
Yeah. There's a lot of cheese in this chapter, you're right.
So they're having like a dinner party with the washed up guests. We basically cut all the stuff that kind of happened in episode 5. Like, it's like Erica shows up, she has put in Jessica's clothes, and they kind of
they're having dinner.
Guests. Yeah. So Erica just comes in and is like, mystery is a genre that ended half a century ago.
Yeah, I like this a lot because she basically says, like, there's nothing new you can do anymore. Every locked room is just an old trick disguised as something new. And I was like, is this supposed to be a hint that basically, like, none of the locked rooms are, like, anything, like, wildly out there? Or is this being like, Umineko has revived the mystery genre by doing something new, and I'm not sure which one it's going for.
I don't know which is worse. It's like, if you'd read all of Agatha Christie, you'd have solved this already. Or, actually, this is revolutionary. I'm like, I don't know
but
which
then
one.
Butler's like, maybe you just don't have any new ideas.
Yes. Insane.
And then Butler says, me? Haha, I don't read books.
I don't read books. I'm too pretty to read.
Erica, right. Fully remembering that last game Butler was like, I love reading. So, yeah. Very funny.
Butler over the course of this VN doing the, like, bimbo book discovery transformation art, where finds a book on the floor and becomes nerd, I guess. gains a popped collar.
Yeah.
So to diffuse the tension, George is like, Maria, you have a puzzle book. Give us a puzzle. And Maria's like, cheese. And then we get...
And then everyone realizes very quickly that this was precisely... that giving Erica puzzles was precisely the wrong thing to do if you were trying to diffuse the tension.
Yeah.
Because she tryhards everything.
She sure does. I love this reading so much. This is like kind of peak Erica content to me. She's so horrible. She's like
the
last person you want to wash up on your island.
Yeah.
So
if Erica ever washes up on my island, I'm beating her to death with a rock.
So I'm gonna read the puzzle quick. So you have a large piece of cheese. A single slice with a knife can split it into two parts. What is the lowest number of slices you can make to cut it into 8 parts?
Yes.
So Natsuhi immediately is like, 4 slices, right? And Ava's like, you're a fucking moron. then the rest of the family get to 3, which is like 2 slices like across the top, and then you like cut it like along the bottom. Like,
yeah,
sort
like
of in
horizontally.
The horizontally, yeah.
Interestingly enough, I solved this before I was given the answer, and I also got 3, but I did it in a different way.
Oh, wait, how did you get 3? Oh, no.
Okay, so you cut it in half, so you have 2 pieces, then you put one on top of the other, cut them in half again, you've got four. And then you stack all four pieces on top of the other and then cut cut vertically through all of them, and then you get eight.
Yeah.
Incredible.
And so I was... So I was just like, I guess it's the same result. It's just there's more stacking involved in mine.
I mean, so then we get Erica and Battler's explanation, which
everyone's mocking Battler because he's like, "How did you all get it so quickly?" Like, because everyone knows what it is, and he's like, and then it's like, okay, so they tell him three, and he was like, "Oh, well, I got one." Because he was like, because I thought of three immediately and then thought that was way too easy. So I came up with one, and Erica also has one as the answer. So she's pissed.
Yeah.
Yes.
So they use the fact that Maria didn't show the illustration of the cheese, so they didn't know what shape the cheese was. So they pictured like a big slice of cheese. And they were
like a very thin one.
Yeah, because you can't break the cheese without the knife, as stated in the rules, you can technically fold the cheese up like an accordion and do one slice in between it.
Yeah, so basically, it has made me realise that we should be thinking about Umineko's Red Truth in terms of pure logic, not in terms of, like, actual normal sentences. Because what it said in the book was, you can only cut the cheese with a knife, meaning you're only allowed to cut the cheese with a knife. But they have interpreted it as, oh, if you can only cut the cheese with a knife, then the cheese can't be cut at all unless you use a knife. So it's like magic folded bendy cheese. And I was like, right, okay, like this is what we need to be doing with the retro.
Yeah.
Cause like all of the stuff that they were talking about like, oh, they didn't say what kind of shape of cheese it was, like I'd thought about that, and like can you do it so that there are non-equal size pieces and stuff? I was like trying to think if there were other ways of doing it like that. But like, yeah, I'd ruled out any ways in which the cheese would break, because I assumed that that would be not allowed. But if you've got magic cheese, then it's fine.
Maybe Umineko needs to be this long because it needs to gaslight you into thinking this is a good way to solve a mystery. Because this is the most frustrating shit I've ever heard. This is not satisfying in the slightest.
I don't know. I quite like this, and this bit in particular, I was like, right, like, this is important, because this is how we need to be thinking about the Red Truth. This is a big hint.
You're right, I simply hate that for us.
Yeah, that's fair.
Anyway, Erica, like, more puzzles are being thrown around, and Erica's just in full, like, I'm so good at everything mode, and George is like, let's talk about chopsticks. And then Erica just switches back into chopstick monologue from last episode.
Yeah, so, and it's really weird because, like, the first few times she's talked about chopsticks, she's been like, oh, chopsticks are so fun. Or like, oh, I really love chopsticks. And this time she's like, I fucking love chopsticks. And she puts on her, like, red face, and she's sweating and stuff. And I was like, what's going on? Like... I mean, she's really ramped up the level of chopstick love here, and I'm a bit concerned,
Again, I have a theory about this, because, again, Umineko was serialized. I think, like, people started, like, memeing on the fact that Erica likes chopsticks, and this is Ryukishi's response to that.
Is that okay? She really fucking loves chopsticks now.
Like, that is just a guess, but it's very funny if true.
It's a really interesting insight into the way that, like, social media and fandom can affect
media,
like the writing of media. So there's a writer that I quite like who specifically has not included, like, she wrote all of three of the book series that she wrote before they were released, so that no fandom input could change what the books were. Versus like the chopsticks thing, or I'm thinking about the Star Wars sequels, and I'm thinking about all of the expectation of like Finn Poe and Reylo that was like put onto those films, and it was like no matter what happened in those films, everyone would be disappointed because they'd like so massively over-theorized. And I feel like this is like a very harmless, mundane version of that, which is like, oh haha, this character's gonna be a little bit weird because it's a fandom in joke.
Again, I don't know if this is true, this is a theory, but that would be my theory as to why this scene is like this.
Makes sense.
I think as well, one of the things that I have faith in Ryukishi not to do, that I don't have faith in, for instance, people like Marvel and shit like that, is that I know in this that he wants us to solve the mystery. He's not going to change the mystery because someone solved it.
Yes.
We actually know this because Ryukishi has said that he would see on blogs and forums that people had solved it and was like, well, I'm glad someone understood it.
Yeah, because that's one of the most frustrating things I think about modern media is that people thinking that because something is solvable and foreshadowed, that means it's bad.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm like, yeah, good reveals, you should be able, if you look at all the right stuff, to guess what's going to go on. Because otherwise it's just a shit twist.
It does frustrate me when I feel like the ending of something has changed. It's just like the ending of Game of Thrones, which I think was like specifically edited to pull the blanket out from underneath the fans because they had all of these predictions as to how it's going. It's like, no, it's not actually going to go that way. And then it wasn't satisfying because it didn't fit with the plot.
Yeah.
And it's like, no, you have set up an ending. You can follow through with that. For all his faults, you're right. I do genuinely believe that Ryukishi would just follow through on that.
He's excited that people are able, that people are solving it, because that's what he wants you to do.
Even for all I've criticized him for, you're right. I do trust Ryukishi that he wouldn't do that.
Yeah. Well, like, as I said, he rewrote episode 3 because he was worried people were going to give up trying to solve it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He is very invested in it being solvable. So good for him.
Shout out to Tamsin Wuer, who is the author that I just referenced. I realised I never said her name.
I know.
Gideon the Ninth.
Of Gideon the Ninth fame, yes. She wrote, I know up to Nona without, like, she specifically didn't check social media. I can't remember. Anyway.
We have another unsettling horror scene.
Yes! In the trapped room.
Yes. The person there is trying to break out. They can't open the door because of the chain. They can't. They're like, it would be fun to hide in the closet if this was hide and seek.
I was like, don't go in the closet. Natsui might be in there.
And then they go to the bathroom and are like, well, I could escape through the drain, but I'd have to smash my body to bits. Not fun. And then they try the window. They try to, like, smash it.
They smash it with, like, a chair, don't they? But, like, the glass smashes, but, like, there's, like, panels of wood going across it, and like they need to smash those as well to get through or something.
Yeah.
The graphic, it's like a big, like a really big, ornate, like, gothic window.
Yeah.
And so they stick their hand through, right?
Yes, and they get all the glass sort of sticking through them, like glass teeth chewing through their skin.
Ooh. Yeah, we get the mouth graphic.
Then it gets creepier. They put their hand to the window and they feel something slimy caressing it.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's like, ooh, it's another person's hand. Someone's holding my hand. And, like, they bend their finger back. And stuff.
Loved this scene. I think this might be my favourite scene in the whole VN. I think it was really atmospherically set up. I think it was well done. I think contained within itself. It was some pretty, it was like some really competently written horror, and crucially competently written horror that I think you could only pull off in this way in either a book or a VN, because the illusion with the window being like a mouth and the hand being like a tongue is something that the view, like the narrator themselves input in onto that scene in their interpretation, and all of the foreshadowing with like wondering if there's a witch behind them, and oh, I would have to go to smash my body to bits to go down the drain, like all of this foreshadowing is a direct,
it's all very internal monologue kind of thing,
and
it
would be really hard to portray this in a like a movie or an anime or whatever it is, or even like a video game. I think this is one of the few times in the entire novel that I felt like the graphics that we got also actually helped, because the mouse graphic I felt actually accentuated the scene, as opposed to normally when I'm like, yeah, okay, that's the 20th time I've seen Battler make that face, it's not fun anymore. So
it,
I was like,
impact. Definitely,
I'm excited for Silent Hill F, y'all.
Yeah.
That's what I came away from this scene feeling.
That was nice. I see.
Yeah, say what you will about Ryukishi, he is very good at writing horror.
If Konami can curb some of his bullshit, I think it could be a good game. So,
well, I don't think Konami will let him make something as long as Umineko, and Echo, if that's what you're worried about.
It's
one
of
my worries.
So it'd
be shorter.
It will be shorter than Umineko. Wonderful. This is what I say whenever somebody's like, oh, I'm thinking of recommending this to you, but it's a bit long. I'm like, it's shorter than Umineko, so don't worry about it.
Yeah.
Well, we're like 2/3 of the way through. Come on, home stretch.
We are 2/3 of the way through. Anyway, yeah. I wanted to give genuine credit where credit's due. No bits. I loved this scene. I thought it was really well written.
Yeah, like, I as well, like, because you get to the bit where, like, this, like, person's hand is, like, bending the finger backwards of the narrator. And, like, I assumed as well, like, from that point onwards, what they were going to do, that like, the kind of climax of the scene was going to be them breaking the finger. And that was going to be, like, how it went down. But it actually doesn't. Because I think it's a little bit metaphorical still, because they're still doing kind of like, is this a witch or is this just like, what's window, what's a person, you know? But I think the implication is basically that like the witch leans down and bites their finger off.
Yes.
And I was like, ooh.
A freak move.
Yeah, it's creepy. I like it. I would also say as well, there's the bit right at the beginning of this scene, they basically close the door to the hallway because they realize that actually, even though it looks like they're so close to freedom there, that's not going to be the way they get out. That's like a false friend. But they also have this bit of narration where they say like, oh, I think my family will be in the dining room, and tries to call like mum and dad, but they can't get their voice to do anything. And so I'm like, I feel like this has to be one of the kids. In that case, so I'm like, I don't think it necessarily disproves, like, if the narrator is Battler's heart, like, I think this could still work. But yeah, I'm like, it's someone who thinks that their mum and dad could conceivably be in this house. Think at least that the house is supposed to be the Ashiramiya mansion.
Yeah, it looks like it in the graphic lore.
Yeah. And like the family all being in the dining room, like that thought, that's very, you know, it tracks with what's going on at the family conference at least.
Yes. Yeah. No. I, on pure vibes alone, had been like, oh, this is Ange. I have no theory to back that up, but I was just like, oh, maybe.
Interesting.
So, That's all I've got for you in terms of like who I think it might be. I don't know whether it's real or I think it might be in the meta world. I think it might be a meta version of someone.
My theory on this, because right after this scene ends, we go to, we're in the mansion corridor with the kids and Erica, and Erica's like, did you hear that? And there's like, there's a sound, basically. So I was like, is the narrative trying to say that these two things are happening at the same time? Personally, I think that it maybe wants you to think that, but that they aren't. Immediately after that, Battler remembers how when he used to come to the mansion as a kid, he used to get really scared.
Yeah.
So I was like, I wonder if this is a kind of warped Battler memory kind of thing about being scared in the house. Battler's heart theory.
Possible. The narrator during this scene does say, I think actually in the first scene that we get in this room, they say like, oh, the beds remind them of horrible memories from their childhood. And so it does imply perhaps that the person who's there has been in the mansion as a child, which, I mean, it rules out Kenzo, but it also rules out a lot of the sons and daughters-in-law, because I had been like, oh, is it Natsui? Mm.
But yeah, it could be any of the siblings, though, still.
Yeah. Also, yeah, anyway.
Also, people like Shannon. The mum-dad reference would be a bit strange. Mm. But, like, she has lived in this house as a child.
She was six.
Six.
No.
Yeah.
Yeah, six when she started working for these people. Which is... fucking disgusting. But intentionally so.
Yes.
I was being paid, but I don't think that makes it any better.
Yeah, I'm like, you can't just you can't just be like, child labor laws, they don't matter if I'm paying the child, right?
I'm giving her an adult wage, it's fine, right?
I remember when I went volunteering as a child, I had to like have a certain number of breaks during the volunteering because you weren't allowed to be employed
for... But like, they hired her in like the 70s, so maybe that's just what Japan was like in the 70s.
If you're alive in Japan in the 70s, write in and tell me it's normal to have a six-year-old as your maid.
I can't imagine the flood of letters we're going to get off that. Anyway,
well, they've got no way to contact her. You've got to write into the Tumblr, remember?
Yeah, yes, send us letters to our houses. We'll set up a PO box.
It does take 2 weeks to go because it has to go all the way to the PO box, which is one end of Japan, and then get forwarded back to our houses.
Wait, I forgot. I can set up Q&As on Spotify. This is what I use that feature for.
Okay.
Asking if people had six-year-old maids in the 70s. I think that's a fast way to get banned off most platforms. Forget Twitter.
I'm not going to phrase it like that. I'm going to say, Q&A, answer this, I'm going to beat you to death with a rock.
Oh, dear.
Ow. So... moving on.
Yeah.
Erica, this is like Erica being kind of introduced to the illusion of the witch, which I guess we didn't really get much of last time. She kind of went straight into the epitaph.
Yeah.
So she starts inquiring about the portrait and about all the ghost stories. About like Maria's like, don't speak bad about Beatrice or she'll curse you.
Yeah.
I have these magic repelling charms, and Shannon's like, also spider webs are good.
Yeah, it was at this point that I realised that this was going to be a Maria versus Erica episode. Because I was like, this is Erica learning about the illusion of the witch, and Maria's around to contest it, and she's not, like, she's already getting very upset, like, that Erica's not immediately being like, oh yeah, Beatrice, she's real. And I was like, this is gonna continue, isn't it?
And who spoiler, boy does it?
It does. But yeah, I'm curious. Like, Erica is like basically wants to learn all about the witch stuff and the demon stuff and what happened to that servant and what exactly have people seen and things. I don't know whether she's interested in actually coming up with any theories about how they could have happened in a non-magical way, or whether she's just intent on shooting them down, because that seems more her style, really.
Well, I mean, we get some more stuff later, but it's a lot of, like, what if you're just being forgetful, or what if you're bad at your job? So, yeah, she's got the best intentions, I'm sure.
Yeah, yeah. We've never had to question those before.
Meanwhile, Baby Triche, who has finished reading all of the old game boards, did it pretty quickly. Good job. She wasn't podcasting about it, though. Although she should. And I would love to see what her podcast would have looked like.
Her slow realizations that, oh, old Beatrice was a bit... She was a bit fucked up, wasn't she?
Yeah. So, several times throughout this entire thing, people turn to Baby Triche and are like, are you sure you want to do this? None of them are like, because the version of you that you turn into is like a vile person, a mass murderer. They're just like, are you sure? And I'm like,
yeah, damn. I mean, she does, by this point, I think it's fair to say that she knows that. I should hope she's worked that out. From seeing the game boards and stuff. But yeah, because we've had the red truth that basically Beatrice was born to serve Battler or something.
This Beatrice was born to serve Battler, yes.
Yeah, so Baby Triche was. And so she's like, well, if Battler wants old Beatrice back, then that's what I'm going to do, regardless of what that person was like. Like, don't do it, girl.
And then she bumps into another Beatrice.
I know. Because what this book needed is more Beatrices.
So this one has, like, her hair is down and she's wearing the suit from episode 2.
Yeah, she meets this Beatrice, by the way, by falling through her own portrait.
Yeah.
And, it seems like these are two halves of Beatrice, like the way she's talking. She's like, oh, I was complete and endless, and then you were born, and now I have to, like, reconcile myself with you. So it's like, almost she's having a very similar journey to Baby Triche, but it's not quite the same.
So, yeah. Go ahead,
also, I will say this, let's call her Elder Triche, because that's a great way of differentiating between
Elder and baby. Yes.
So Elder Triche, she uses the speech pattern that Beatrice used in, like, when we saw her, like, before she died.
Yeah, I'm fairly certain they have different voice actors, don't they? Baby Triche.
No, it's the same voice actor.
Is it? She's just got range. Cool.
She's just got the range. She's very good. But she uses a different pronoun to the one that Baby Triche is using.
Okay.
Baby Triche is using watashi, which is like a more standard feminine pronoun. And Elder Triche is using warewa, which is very fun to pronounce, which is a more like archaic, formal pronoun. It would be quite similar to, like, the royal we is a pretty good English, like, comparison. Okay. Although I'm very glad they did not write her speaking the royal we, because that would be fucking indecipherable if they chose to do that. But, like, that's basically the effect it has.
Okay.
If they'd written her writing in the royal we, the number of Gollum bits that I would have done over the course of the podcast, exponentially higher.
You can still do that.
I shall think of some Gollum bits.
I interpreted this as, because Elder Triche basically introduces herself as the Golden Witch Beatrice, ruler of Rokkenjima's knight or whatever. And so Baby Triche is like, we each have something that the other one doesn't. Like, that one Elder Triche, she's got like the magic and the power and stuff, and I've got the wants to help battler.
Yeah.
And that together we will, if we merge ourselves, we will become the original Beatrice, who was both of those things. So I like, I guess, interpreted Elder Triche as essentially Kinzo's witch legend. And whatever was going on with the Cuadorian Beatrice and all of the stuff that he kind of created around her. And that baby Triche is essentially Shannon's co-opted version of that.
Yeah.
And which is why Shannon's looks exactly like the portrait, because that's the only yes. actual reference that she has. But she obviously acts exactly like Shannon at the moment. Yeah, I'm curious as to what we're going to do with that. I'm kind of hoping that the two will give us more insight into Elder Triche and, you know, what that whole deal was about.
Yeah. I would like to know something.
Something would be great. But yeah.
We now move to the final chapter of our reading. So the cousins and Erica and Shannon have gone back to the guest house. And they talk in more detail about Beatrice, and Shannon mentions that she didn't see her directly. And then we cut to Elder Triche and Baby Triche talking about anti-magic toxin.
Yes, we're back on the toxin.
Just in case you guys have forgotten about that. So she talks about how she does these kind of tricks to, like, sort of establish her existence. Because
and weaken the toxin, basically. Yeah.
Because she can't be directly seen, but if she, like, leaves a window open that wasn't open before, then that weakens the toxin, because it means...
There's space for unknown kind of things to be going on. But yeah, what this essentially involves is, like, these two Beatrices are following servants around the mansion, unlocking windows that they've just locked, and going, tee-hee!
yes.
Which I love. They talk about, like, Elder Triche is like, once I even scared the servants by leaving a big pile of cutlery in the kitchen and drawing a magic circle. Like, it's all very, like...
Yes.
Yeah, low-level stuff, but stuff that they can't really explain.
Mm-hmm. And Ange and Featherine have another little cut-in where Ange is like, this makes sense. If you're at a place that's known for ghosts, if something weird happens, you're going to think it's a ghost.
Yeah.
Regardless of whether it was a ghost or not. And so, if you're given a certain result... You like there's so many ways you can fill in the gaps as to how that result happened.
Yeah, if you're in a mansion where there is an established witch legend, then why is this random window unlocked? One of the possibilities is a witch did it. Schrodinger's window.
Confirmation bias, I believe. You believe something to be true, and so everything becomes evidence of it, rather than...
But also, the way that the mansion is just lends itself very well to establishing a witch.
Yes, because it's
this
old.
This mansion is almost
Western.
Purpose-built to establish a witch, if you
it's
think about,
old,
like...
It's big, there are servants, there are lots of moving parts, like...
It's also, like, there are existing legends that Kumasawa has talked about in prior episodes about there being demons on the island, that's why there was a shrine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, Kinzo knew what the fuck he was doing.
They also, Featherine and Ange also make a really... nice little point here, where because they say, like, oh yeah, magic is about embellishing the process of something else that's occurring, which is a point Delana made, I think, in an earlier episode. But then they say, like, in this way, a mass-produced stuffed animal can be reborn as a unique one filled with a mother's love. And I was like, okay, that's totally a reference to how Sakutaro was born brought from a shop.
Yes.
I was like, just that reference. I was like, okay, that's weirdly specific, isn't it?
Wonder why.
But yeah, Sakutaro does not become less beautiful just because he was bought from a shop.
Just because Rosa ran out of time to make something and was like, let's go to build a bear.
Course Rosa didn't make it. Of course she wouldn't have spent any fucking time doing anything for her own daughter. She's not even there half the time. Like, you know.
It makes sense. Nah, just get some, like, incredibly overworked, underpaid person in Taiwan to sew it for you and then... ship it over.
Exactly. Yes. I like to think it was Build-A-Bear specifically because Rosa would have to sit through the bear building ceremony alone, just constantly looking at her watch, being like, when the fuck is this over with?
As somebody who used to work at Build-A-Bear, those were my favourite customers. Yes, I would absolutely force them to do the heart ceremony. Because it was company policy. And yeah. I would get penalised if I didn't force them to do the heart ceremony.
And you're like, no, you're doing this.
Like, my job is more important than you being humiliated for 30 seconds. You're going to tap that heart and you're going to wave it in the air and rub it on your elbow and I swear to fucking God you're making a wish. And people would do it. They do it.
Yeah, and I'm sure Rosa would, but she wouldn't be happy about it.
No.
I would have bullied Rosa into putting a wish in Sakutaro.
Doing God's work. anyway, we cut back to the guest house, where Erica just goes in on Shannon for being bad at her job.
Yeah. She's like, clearly you just never lock the windows properly.
Yeah.
It's so funny.
Clearly all the servants are, like, tricking you, because they're just playing, like, little tricks, and you think it's real.
You would think... she would pick a more astute person to bully. Like, surely Erica...
because Erica Shannon's in on the most vulnerable, doesn't she? Like, she's going for the low-hanging fruit. She's like, I'm going to attack Shannon and Maria.
Because if she went after... when she went after Jessica last episode, nobody defended Jessica. Because the closest Jessica has to somebody who would defend her would be Cannon, and Cannon's too much of a coward to do it. So, like,
I'm not even sure he was there, also.
Yeah, I don't think
he
was there.
He's not there in this scene. Battler, basically no one's going to question a bullying Battler.
Same for George. Show us some balls, Erica. Go after Kraus.
Like... But somebody will leap in to defend Shannon. That's the thing. Like, Jessica, Battler, and George individually all have reasons why they would want to jump in and defend... Sure, Kraus has got more status within the family, but who's going to stop Erica from starting, like, once she's figured out that she can bully Kraus all she wants, like, no one's going to stop her. She's actually managed to pick the two people that, like, people care if you're mean to them.
Yeah, but, like, Erica isn't a person who thinks about people caring for each other, because there's no empirical evidence for it, as we saw in the last episode. She's like, well, your love cannot be like undisputably proved, so therefore it doesn't exist, and you're lying.
Yeah,
she's great. I love her. Then she gets into a fight with a 9-year-old that is elevated to the witch plane.
Yeah, she's like, I'm done with bullying Shannon. Let's bully the 9-year-old girl now.
So Maria claims that Beatrice would, when she came to the island, would make candy appear inside an upside down cup that was previously empty.
Yes. Yeah. So she was like, I've seen real magic. So Beatrice is real and she's magic.
Yeah. And Erica is like, this will be a good time. And like, summons Dullinor as Erica enters her witch outfit. No, sorry, Maria is in her witch outfit.
Like, yeah, Dullinor turns up and is like, really? Like, you're doing this? Like,
yeah. This battle is really not worth it. Like, this is what I'm spending my time doing, seriously?
Yeah, so Maria, so Erica's like, okay, beat her to death.
Yeah, literally.
With a rock.
No! And so Dullinor pulls out her red sword and is like, you might be telling a lie. And then Dullinor goes, you have to respond, it's Noxus 7th. And Maria's like, fine, this story really happened in red. And there's a whole bunch of stuff. There's no tricks.
It eventually comes to mind that Maria closes her eyes when she says the magic words. Mm. And so Erica in the real world is able to just put a piece of like chocolate or whatever underneath the teacup and lift it up and be like, look, I did your magic trick.
Yeah, yeah, it's basically...
It's so horrible. She's like... Maria's like, you can do magic as well? And Erica's like, look, I can do magic. We're really getting on now. And then she's like, you're a fucking moron. I just put it in while your eyes are closed. You're so fucking stupid. This is why you can't solve cheese puzzles. Get the hell out of my mansion.
Yeah, she fucking goes off, and it's miserable, because she's clearly really enjoying owning this small child. But yeah, basically,
I don't need to wash up on the shores of a mansion if I want to be mean to children. I just log on to Roblox. Come on, Erica.
Oh god. Erica in the age of the internet would be so bad.
Oh god.
So Erica has like a Reddit account where she like tries to put out all these like super long nuanced arguments to try and make people feel bad. And then she has a Twitter account where she just types KYS in the replies to every child on the website.
Yeah. God, Erica logging onto Am I the Asshole to ask what, like, type out the most long and complicated thing about, like, witches and shit and how she went to this island and solved the epitaph. And she's like, Am I the Asshole for...
Okay, that is a great idea for if we have a pod Reddit that we make that post.
That's a really good idea. The unfortunate thing about it is, however, that I feel that Erica would never get to the point where she even considered that she was the asshole.
I agree with you. I think you have too much faith in the people on the Am I the Asshole Reddit, because I think
I think probably a lot of people who go, I know I'm not the asshole, I'm looking for people to agree with me.
My fucking murder doll said I was an asshole for doing this, and that this was a totally unwarranted use of the Great Court of Heaven's military forces, but I disagree. This 9-year-old needed to be taken down a peg.
Yeah, Delana like drags her out and is like, come on, this battle is over.
Yes. So Erica's like being mean, and then Sakutaro appears and gives out a blue truth, and I was like, it's the boy.
Yeah. And Sakutaro uses his diplomatic immunity, which was established in episode 4, to end the fight. And so Erica leaves with a parting line, simply by the existence of the Upside Down Cup. This level of reasoning was possible for Erica Furudo. What do you think, everyone?
It's so lame. It's so bad. I quite like this in the sense that, like, yeah, like, Sakutaro comes in, he saves the day a little bit by giving the blue truth, like, just because Erica did it with sleight of hand doesn't mean Beatrice didn't do it with magic. So, like, that leaves both options open, I guess. But, yeah, like, basically it was established that, like, what Erica wanted from that exchange was she wanted Maria to basically break down and admit there was no witch so that they didn't have to fight about it anymore. Like, she wanted to win in the first thing just by humiliating her, like, enough, basically.
It's interesting because that implies that, like, Erica believes that her fight is primarily going to be against Maria.
Maria this time, yeah.
Which, I feel like if you just defeated Maria, like, somebody else would come along to fight. Like, the story has to go on. Just because you've disproved a 9-year-old doesn't mean no one's going to murder anyone.
I guess Maria's, like, the primary witch advocate on the island.
She is the witch truther.
So I guess it depends where this episode ends up going. like, if this is an episode with a really strong, like, witch truth explanation that everybody is believing, then shooting down, and then if Maria's, like, the kind of crux of all of that, then I guess disproving Maria would shut it all down.
Yes. Yeah. It sort of implies also that Erica has an idea as to where this is going to go.
Hmm. She certainly has a... She, like, this piece, Erica, certainly has knowledge of the previous game. Yes. She mentions it a couple of times. So, yeah, she's got some meta-knowledge even as the piece, so it's possible.
Yeah. I do think it's interesting that Battler's written a game that's a lot less charitable to Erica than the last one was.
certainly at least quicker, like, uncharitable quicker. Yeah.
Like, because George is fully, like, does the full centrist, like, I don't agree with your actions there.
Yeah, like they do, everyone does actually, because, like, Maria ends this argument by basically crying her eyes out in the middle of the guest house, and they all take her to upstairs and leave Erica by herself, because they're like, yeah, they're just like, we don't want you to come with us, like, you've been horrible to this child.
Which she has. So
the problem I'm having with this episode is that I desperately want Maria to win, but I also know that she can't.
I don't know. I retain that I think we're supposed to start wanting the witch side to win.
Well, this is the thing. I want the witch side to win, but I want human logic to win. I just don't want Erica to be the person who's delivering it. Yeah, it is getting complicated for me.
This is the thing I'm feeling at the moment. I'm like, I know what you want from me, Brooke. Like, I know that you want me to start siding with the witches. And I know that somewhere in the back of my mind, yeah, of course I'm rooting for Maria because Erica's an asshole. But also, I fucking hate when I know what you're doing. I want to be cleverer than you, you stupid book. And as a consequence, I'm, like, dragging my heels for being, like, taken into the witch explanation. I say, sat wearing a battler witch cloak.
Yeah.
And that's mostly to do with my dear friend Courtney than it is actually Umanako.
Oh, I do also like, by the way, I'd forgotten about this, that, like, Maria's crying her eyes out after this argument, and the kids all start to take her upstairs, and then she just has this moment where, like, stops crying, does her little witch laugh, and is like, tells Erica she's a lump of toxin.
Yeah.
And that they're going to have a round two later, and then goes back to crying and, like, goes back upstairs, and I'm just like, okay.
Shout out to Gaslight Gatekeep Girl Boss Maria for absolutely working all sides of that situation.
Lump of toxin, also really very good.
Lump of toxin will be the new Twitter handle if we cannot get the old one back.
Powerful. Kumasawa comes back from her bath and is like, where did everyone go? And Erica's like, you just missed them. But I hear you know a lot about all the lore of this island, and then the chapter ends.
And I'm like, yes. Boy, I sure hope the narration is going to let us hear some of that lore, because I'd love it. I really want to hear it.
I mean, we've had a lot of it before already from Kumasawa.
I feel like there's more. Kumasawa knows more than she's told us.
Mm.
But do you think she'd tell Erica?
I don't know. No. Maybe. Part of the problem I'm feeling is that nobody's asked enough questions. Like, I think a lot of the servants and like Nanjo knows more, I think, than is going on. And just nobody's asked him.
Yeah.
And I feel like maybe, like, either he's holding back because he thinks it's not relevant or whatever. But, like, yeah, maybe if someone just asked, like, you know how you know all that stuff about mystery novels? Do you want to talk to us about it? Because it was again confirmed in this reading that he does know a lot about mystery novels, like, wasn't just a bit. And so I'm like, someone asked him about them, tell us your knowledge, Nanjo.
Nanjo's actually solved every single locked room because there's no new mysteries, and he's read widely, so he absolutely knows all the answers already.
He's just decided not to bother telling anyone.
Insane.
Yeah, they're like, why didn't you tell anyone, Nanjo? You didn't ask.
That's a very Umineko thing.
Like, I can believe he would do that. So, someone asked Nanjo a question.
Yes.
I was about to say 2022, but 1986, I guess.
So that concludes our reading. Any final thoughts?
Epitaph Corner.
I'm very interested to get exposition ever.
It's coming.
I'm begging. I'm literally begging.
You're going up to Rikishi's house like, tell me things, please.
Hat in hand. Please, sir, give me some exposition.
Tweet Ryukishi and be like, give me exposition or I'll beat you to death with a rock.
This is now going to haunt me forever.
Yeah. This is going to come up in your reasons why you're cancelled.
Reasons why I'm cancelled. I told a bot I would beat it to death with a rock. See, the thing is, like, it was fully a bit, and I was building, I built up to it as well because I'd been interacting with the bot before. Like, when we say it out of context, it sounds really quite awful because it's like, well, this has just come from nowhere. But like, I'd been building up by being like getting angrier and angrier at the bot. And then I saw the Sailor MILF tweet and I was like, it's time.
What I love about this whole bit, Rowan, is that no one else saw this unless they went into our tweets and replies, which I don't think anyone does. So you did this entire bit yourself.
Well, sometimes you get when people do replies on your Twitter timeline.
You mostly only get them if you're following the person they're replying to.
I'm learning new things about my goth woman skit. That means that, like, if we get the Twitter back and you're able to see our tweets, if you go into our replies, there's so many replies of me responding to Umineko shit and
with goth
random
woman
people
things.
Being like, really big fan of this. By any chance, do you think anyone? Do you think they're a goth? Are they a goth? And I'll do it to like our followers, and I'll do it to like random people on the internet. But I'll also just like see an Ace Attorney fan art and then be like, are they goths?
But if you're not in the replies, you don't have any context. Is that what you're saying?
I truly have been doing bits for me and me alone.
Which is honestly very on brand for you, I'm going to say
that's
that.
So good.
I can't believe, because I'd just been like not mentioning it on the pod because I was like, I don't want to do Twitter review on the pod. But now I'm hearing that like there's been extended lore that no one knows. Wow. So, because one of my other favourite things, back in the day when we had a Twitter, one of my other favourite things to do would be to, like, reply to a random, particularly a viral tweet with, is this Umineko? So it's just, like, a picture of people playing chess, and I'd be like, is this Umineko? And I've just, all of that hard work gone to waste.
All those hours.
Wow.
That's so sad.
Well, follow the Tumblr. I'm sure it'll be much more competently managed.
Things that we're doing on the Tumblr at the moment, we're doing motivational quotes of the day for each of the Umineko characters. which I have been told are extremely out of character. Wow. Rude. And what kind of Pokemon each of our Umineko characters would have.
Yes. Shout out to one of our fair listeners for inspiring that thread.
Yes. It's going to be great.
Yes.
Anyway, Epitaph Corner?
Epitaph Corner?
Yeah, we're at an hour and 22. What a perfect time to start a new segment. Welcome to Jess's Epitaph Corner.
Yeah, let's go. Do you want to go first or second?
I will go second because I'm more deletable.
Right.
You are moderatable. I love you, bestie.
I have been on Maps again. I've been on Wikipedia also.
Exciting.
I've been... I was looking at Japan last time. I'm back in Taiwan and Hong Kong again this week. because I was thinking, like, as much as the Hiroshima and Nagasaki kind of worked for, like, a town / city that has been changed drastically since before the war, I was like, I wonder if there are similar stories, but, like, not quite as dramatic, that could be said about Taiwan and Hong Kong.
Well known, yeah.
So interestingly, both Taiwan and Hong Kong have both been invaded by Japan, which I thought was important. I see, this is a lot of things about history I did not know. Hong Kong was invaded for 4 years as part of World War II. The Japanese tore down a lot of buildings, built new ones. I was like, oh, okay. Like, they did a lot of kind of reconstructing of things. But I was like, because I was thinking, like, why would Kinzo have been living there as well? Like, a Japanese invasion, that makes sense. Like, but 4 years, that's not, like, a very long time. And part of World War II, he wasn't a kid then. Meanwhile, Taiwan has been a Japanese colony from 1895 till the end of World War II. And Japan encouraged lots of Japanese people to move there because they were trying to convert people to Japanese values. And I was like, ooh, what if Kinzo, like, grew up there as part of one of those families? And that's why he, like, so he like, grew up in a kind of Japanese area of Taiwan. But then when World War II ended, the Japanese got kicked out. And Taiwan got loads of money from the Allies and had, like, this massive economic redevelopment thing and, like, changed everything because they got their own country back. So I was like, that would probably change the landscape quite a lot. This is not relevant, but Taiwan also has a typhoon season. Suspicious.
Honestly, I'm loving that this is turning into, like, history corner. I'm so refreshed. I don't care about Umineko. I want to learn more about, like, the
now we're going into biology.
Ooh.
We're back in Taiwan again. I was like, right, what is the Sweetfish River? I googled sweetfishes. So sweetfish are they're also known as Ayu, spelled A-Y-U. They live around East Asia. They typically only live for 1 year. They went extinct in Taiwan in 1968 because of pollution, which apparently seems quite bad there for some reason. And I was like, ooh, relevant.
Oh my God, going full circle back to the fast fashion factories and Sakataro.
So one of the things I was doing was I looked up the Japanese word for village because I was like, is that going to be relevant? Is there going to be a place? Because it's Mura, M-U-R-A. There are no place names that I could find in Taiwan that look like that. But I was wondering because I went back to, is it a mountain range or maybe the Tropic of Cancer? Because, like, it kind of makes sense for either of them because, like, if you think of the sweetfish story, it's like both the mountain and the tropic go from shore to shore. So yeah. It's like they go to the sea and come back or whatever. There are, like, if you follow the mountain range from north to south, there are no actual towns there because there's a big mountain range. What there is the tallest mountain. Is that a village?
Going back to down to, like, ant farm is a village.
Yeah, basically the tallest mountain is called Yushan. It used to be in the ocean.
Ooh.
And basically there was, like, some plate tectonics or something pushed the mountain out of the sea, which is why it's, like, a big mountain now. And so I was like, is that the shore the two speak of?
Legendary.
I don't know what you do with that, though, because I feel like the Eurasian and Philippine sea plate do not really... they're not six letters. anyway, but during the Japanese rule, the mountain was called Nitaka. Mm-hmm. Like ni, as in two.
Oh.
But not... I still don't... then still not the right letters.
No. No. There is also a part of my soul that's like, is it going to be as niche as this?
I don't know. I don't but know interestingly what... enough, that mountain is also on the Tropic of Cancer.
Ooh.
Just in the other direction. So, yeah, it could technically work as a place if either were the Sweetfish River. That's all I have at this moment. I feel like I'm getting somewhere, but I feel like... there's nowhere else I can go with this line of logic, really. So I don't, like... Mm. I feel like I've exhausted the names and stuff and not found anything that works as a six-letter word. So we'll have to go for a different tack next time, I think.
That's fair.
I will say, I'm not going to say what, but I think you've made some good strides in maybe solving it. I'm surprised by some of the revelations you have had.
I
don't like that because I feel like that means that some of what I've said is right, but like I don't know where else to go.
I think that's the fish, and I think it's interesting that the fish are extinct in Taiwan, but I think that might be the fish. I feel like that's the bit that's
right, but then maybe the mountain is not the village.
That's fair. I want to clarify, because we're from England, I have no idea what, like, niche geographical knowledge would be for somebody who lives in that part of the world. Like,
yeah, knowing... I've been very much trying to think about, as I'm doing this, what kind of things would be visible on a really basic atlas.
Yeah.
And it's things like big cities and, like, a big mountain, possibly. It was on the atlas I looked at least, which had very little on it.
I will say that you do remember that they have mentioned before that it doesn't necessarily have to be a literal Sweetfish River.
Is there like a trade route that the fish go down or something?
Necessarily have to do fish. It's just the definition of Sweetfish is a fish that returns to the sea.
Yeah, this is why I was thinking it's like a mountain range that goes from sea to sea, or yeah, the Tropic of Cancer that goes from one shore to the other. But yeah, I'm not sure what else flows through this country particularly.
Yeah.
Because I'm pretty sure that's the bit that they looked at the atlas for.
It would make sense.
But yeah, it's also working out like how metaphorical things like village and shore are, because if I'm looking for an actual village, that actually helps, but like I don't know whether I am. Like
I feel like you're not looking for like a literal village. If nothing else, I don't feel like it would turn up on an atlas. If like a what I would constitute to be a village, which is relatively small, I don't think that would turn up on a basic atlas.
Yeah, so I was thinking like, but even is it a settlement, or is it like a landmark, or is it like a gathering of something, or yeah.
I wonder if the word that they use for village can be translated any other ways. I wonder if that's any help. Like,
not sure.
Get good sometimes, like in translated, particularly translated poetry, if something's got multiple meanings, like you have to pick one of the meanings, and it could be that they picked the village.
You also
meaning.
Have to keep in mind there could be some kanji in common with some of the kanji readings of the word.
Yeah, like they talked about, didn't they, in episode 3, that like one of the kanji in village is in Maria's name, for instance.
Yeah.
And like, we just wouldn't know that kind of thing.
Yeah.
But I am presuming that because there is an English solvable version of the epitaph, that is not like, you know, integral to it.
It's not integral to it. So, Rowan, you got any zingers for the crowd?
Okay. I'm serious. So I was like, I was watching Jess's Titanic efforts, and when I brought my beautiful star signs bit to the pod last week, I thought this was quite fun having something to contribute to the epitaph corner. I'm giving myself one night and one night only to see if I can figure it out. And if I can't figure it out in one evening, I've spent too much time thinking about it, and I should just let it to people more intelligent and well-read than I am. So I learned what an exponential cipher was, because I had been convinced that it was a cipher, because I am fixated on this being a numbies game. So in as brief a terms as I possibly can, a cipher is if you assign every letter of the alphabet a number. A cipher is when you do something to that number to turn it into another number, and therefore letter to letter. So the traditional one is the Caesar cipher, which is +3. So A, 1 + 3, 4, you use the fourth letter of the alphabet, and then you use that for A.
Yeah, so it's like A becomes D, B becomes E, that kind of thing.
Yeah. And if you know the key, which is the letter, the number that you're doing, you can obviously reverse engineer it by doing some maths. Having not been a maths person, this very much hurt my head to learn about, but I learned about it, I did. Exponential cipher is when you do something to the power of something. So 1 to the power of something. And sometimes these happen in pairs. So when you write out your plain text, which is the text that you want to encode, you pair up the letters. So for example, if your first word is once, you have O-N-C-E.
Nice. Nice spellings.
Yeah, that's how that
that's right.
Goes. Okay. And so then you do something to the the numbers for O and N and C and E. And I was like, oh my God, tear apart the two that are close, etc., etc. There is lots of vocabulary in the epitaph, which makes me feel like it could be a cipher. Talks about keys, talks about to the power of, talks about drawing apart the two that are close. I had theories where I was like, ah, these are like different parts of an equation. I was like, all up in it. The problem is, I don't know what I'm supposed to be, what my ciphertext is.
Yeah.
In order to crack a cipher, you need to have something to crack.
Yeah.
And while I have all of the indications as to what the cipher might be, like that it might be a cipher, I just couldn't find the thing to work backwards from. So I couldn't find the like key phrase that I would go back on.
Yeah, because like, is it the 11 character word like that we've been saying? Is it like quadrillion maybe? Is it once and for the last time? Is it praise my noble name? Is it?
And I had some theories, but the honest answer is, in order to test these, I would have to do some like relatively heavyweight maths, which is something that would be very, very time consuming for me. And I can't be asked.
Yeah, I have been focusing very hard on the first part of the epitaph because I don't want to do maths. Maths is my least favourite thing to do, and I'm not going to be fannying around with that kind of thing, at least until I've got something to work with.
Yeah, I mean, I enjoyed learning about ciphers. I'll be honest, it was interesting, but I got to the point where I was like, if I do this, so if I decide on a key phrase and I do the maths, it's going to take me a while. And when I get a result, if it is not something that is the correct answer, I won't know. If I've got the wrong phrase, I've got the wrong key, or my maths is wrong. And I could spend weeks on this. And I got better shit to do. I'm very sorry, Umineko, but I just hit a point where I was like, this could take literally days and days and days, and I don't want to do maths. So instead I read a book cover to cover and fixed an SLR camera. I am simply satisfied with that. But that was my contribution to the Epitaph Corner as quickly as I could. Like, I learned what a cipher was. I was like, I wonder if this is a cipher. Wonder if it's this kind of cipher. I'm not going to reverse engineer this because I'm too...
If I can find some easy plug-and-play cipher decoders on the internet, I might have a play around with some of those things.
Sadly, they don't exist. I did have a look at this. Because the problem is you have to, like, reverse engineer each number individually. And there are so many variables about what the key and the modulo and the ciphertext could be that I just can't. So I'm like, okay, the book I was reading had an example where there was four separate keys. I'm like, and that was their, like, beginner example. I was like, there were so many variables. If I had a certainty as to, like, what one of these things was, I might be okay. But I'm sitting here like, okay, so I'm going to assume it's modulo 26 because we are using a 26-letter alphabet.
Yeah,
like, oh, that's why Ryakishi was impressed it got translated, because he was using a different modulo. And then I'm like...
Yeah, like... Oh, there's so many things, like, especially as, like, what I feel like is the closest thing we have to something concrete is that the 11 character word is quadrillion, but we still don't know that, like, that could still be wrong.
No.
Especially because quadrillion is an awkward fucking word. And yeah, or it could be right, but we're just not doing the right thing to it. Is the key. You know how you write boobies on a calculator?
Yes.
Is that number the key? Each time I have a thought about the epitaph, I'm also thinking, is this a memeable answer?
Yeah, that upsets me. Alas, it is solvable, and but not by me. Not in an evening. And that's Rowan trying done for the year.
Well, I appreciate you trying. I will say I think you are further away than Jess's, but hey, you never know.
I'm a lot further away than Jess's, I think. But
we are working together, Courtney.
I'm glad I'm further away than Jess's, because I would have felt really bad if in an evening of reading a book about a topic I've never touched before, I had gotten further.
Yeah, that would upset me, because, like, at this point, I'm putting in, like, a couple of hours every couple of weeks to this epitaph. I don't want to. It just happens. Like, I just get in this zone where I'm like, epitaph. I know that if I look at this long enough, I'll solve it. And then I eventually have to concede that I don't and give up.
No. I get you. I think the reason I ended up spending a full evening on it was because I was finding learning about ciphers interesting.
They are cool.
I did get to a point where I was like, I bet this isn't it, but I couldn't bear myself to try something new. So I was like, well, we're going all in on this.
Nice.
It has been written in the universe. If I'm proved right in any sense, then at least it's been recorded.
Maybe when they give us our next epitaph hint, it'll crack everything open.
Erica turns off and is like, actually, it's modulo 15. They're using the Hawaiian alphabet. And I'm like, fuck yeah, that's a prime number, baby.
Well, that's a good note to end on, but I do have a few more numbers for you before we go.
No.
So, next reading is read from chapter 6, The Lovers, to the end of chapter 8, Zeppar and Furfur.
What? Are those more OC names? I bet they are.
You may have already met Zeppar and Furfur.
I bet it's the twins, isn't it? It's the twins. Incredible.
Sometimes Zoom and Echo does things and I feel this really unwell feeling wash over my whole body.
Thanks, Ryukishi! Yeah, good reading. So here's where I would normally plug the Twitter, but if it's on the description, it's because we haven't got our account back yet. If it is in the description, congrats, we won.
Yeah.
So otherwise, our personal Twitters are in the description, and the Tumblr is also there, where Jess will be posting, and they've already done some bangers and have been scolded by a Tumblr user. So
yes.
Really off to a good start on that one.
Excellent.
As any good Tumblr should be.
The discourse. It begins.
That is all for this episode. Thank you and good night.
Good night, precious.